This coming week, we're going to read Parshat Noach, a famous story about Noah with the flood. And it's a beautiful story. Everybody knows the story. That's why it's good to teach the Parsha, because you don't have to introduce people to something that they don't know. Okay, we'll read the source number one. Go ahead.
God's command to Noah. God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth has become full of robbery because of them, and I am destroying them from the earth. Make for yourself an ark from gopher wood. You should make the ark with compartments, and you should seal it both inside and outside with tar."
Okay, then God tells Noah, people are evil, they're bad, they're doing all the worst thing in the world between man and man, and between man and God, and therefore I had enough of them.
Created man.
Yeah. And he gave them, and he knew it's going to happen, right? That's why he didn't destroy completely. He just destroyed the bad guys. The problem is everybody was bad besides Noah and his family. And then God gave them the chance. God gave, you see, the first 1,000 years, God made the world in a way of kindness. Everybody is doing well. People live to 1,000 years. They're strong. They're big. The weather is perfect at San Francisco every day of the year. The fruit are big. Everything. San Diego, I'm sorry. I was not there.
Close.
Yeah, then I don't. To me, it's all the same. The point is, life was great. And people abused it. And the stronger abused the weaker. They did whatever they wanted with other people who are weaker than them. Whoever was stronger survived and finished. And God saw that this way, it's not working. The second 1,000 years of the creation was the main event, was the flood. God decided to be strict, to discipline. It's gvura. It's a discipline. And God destroyed the world, and he cleaned up the world. He left only Noah with his family. But then being only gvura, only discipline doesn't work either. You'll be left with nobody. And the 3,000 years came Abraham. And that was the beginning of the Jewish people, the third 1,000 years when God gave the Torah to the Jewish people. It's a combination of kindness and strictness and discipline. It's a little of this and a little of the other one. It doesn't mean that God made an experiment the first 1,000 years and it didn't work. And he didn't know it's not going to work. And then he made another experiment and it didn't work. And then he discovered the final way. God wanted to give to human being, if there wouldn't be just kindness, human being would come and say, if you would just give us everything, we would be great, it would be amazing. God said, we tried it. It didn't work. Then the other way, somebody would come and say, there's some serious angry people, if God would be a little stricter, keep the people like this, they would be mentioned. We tried this too. It didn't work. The right way is the combination of what the Torah is giving us in the 3,000 year of creation. God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, basically to humanity. And really, that's what is happening. Not that God didn't know. God knew that human beings will mess up. He knew it. But he had to let it play out. It still wanted to have human beings, even if they mess up. Even sometimes he has to take strict measures. The good of humanity, of the world, overweighs by far the bad of the world. With all that service in the world, it still there is much more good than bad. It's hard to think like this in a time like this week, but that's the truth. Okay, continue.
I am bringing the flood waters upon the earth to destroy all living beings under the heavens. All that is upon the earth will perish. I will set up my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you and your sons, and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Of all living beings, you should bring two of each into the ark to preserve alive with you. They shall be male and female. As for you, take for yourself from all edible foods and gather it, and it shall be for you and for them to eat.
God told them, you will build an ark, you and your wife and your children, their wives, they'll come to the ark. Everything, your family is surviving, everything is good. Take some food, get into the basement, and stay there until COVID is over, basically. And Noah did everything that God commanded them. Beautiful. Source number two. Now we're reading about Moses. That Noah's reaction, God told them, I'm going to destroy the world, but I'll save you. Noah said, okay, no problem, I'm going to build the ark. And he invited anybody who wants to join the ark, he invited, but That's okay. You know, the bad people, they have to go. That's understood. Makes sense. I will see Moses' reaction. Go ahead. In the story of the golden calf.
God's suggestion to Moses. God said to Moses, go in the sand for your people if you have brought up from the land of Egypt of acted corrupt.
You see, Moses was at that time at Mount Sinai, 40 days at Mount Sinai, after God gave said the Ten Commandments to the Jews, Moses was there to pick up the two tablets. He was on a mission. He flew up to heaven he went up at Mount Sinai to pick up the two tablets. But God gives him the tablets, and then he tells them, I have some news for you. Your people, it's not his people. When they're bad, they're his people. Now, it's like your children. When the children don't behave, it's just like you. They're just like you. And your children have messed up. They build an idol. They worshiped idols. Go ahead.
They have quickly turned away from the path that I have commanded them. They have made themselves a molten calf. They have prostrated themselves before it, slaughtered sacrifices to it, and said, there are our gods, Israel, who have brought you up from the land of Egypt. God said to Moses, I have seen these people, and they are a stiff-necked people. Now leave me alone, and my anger will be kindled against them, so that I will annihilate them, and I will make you into a great nation.
God tells them, your people had worshipped idols. They went 40 days after Mount Sinai, when God said in the first commandment, I am your God. The second commandment, do not worship idols. They worshipped idols. God says, they are stiff-necked people, stubborn people. I will destroy them. I'll destroy them. And I make from you, Moses, a big nation. Just like the same offer he gave to Noah. Don't know, I'll destroy the world, and I'll start from you. The same thing he tells Moses, I destroyed the Jewish people, and start from you. Let's see what was Moses' reaction. Go ahead.
Moses pleaded before God and said, why, God, should your anger be kindled against your people, whom you have brought up from the land of Egypt with great power and with a strong hand?
Moses started to pray to God. They didn't say yes, okay, no problem. He says, why you want to do this? He begged God, you took out these people from the land of Egypt. What is the world going to say? You took them out from Egypt to destroy them in the desert? And then he continued, Remember
Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants to whom you swore by your very self, and to whom you said, I will multiply your seed like the stars of the heaven, and all this land which I said that I would give to your seed, they shall keep it as their possession forever.
Says, you promised that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that the children will be the people who go out from Egypt, and you make them as so many as the stars of the heaven, and now you're going to destroy them. And if Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob together were not there to support, to defend your people, not enough to save them, then your people will come out from me, you'll be angry one time, they will do something wrong, you'll destroy them again. Then where are we going with it? Moses
returned to God and said, please, this nation has committed a grave sin. They have made themselves a god of gold. Now if you forgive their sin, then good. But if not, erase me now from your book.
That was another time when Moses pleaded with God in the continuation of the same story. And he told God, he gave God an ultimatum. If you destroy them, erase me from your book. Kill me too. I don't want to be a part of this deal. Just the opposite of Noah. Noah said, oh, you want to kill them? Fine. I'm going to survive, my wife, my children. Fine, try, good. It's not my fault. I tried my best. It didn't work.
It took him 120 years to build an ark. So I mean, by then, I'm sure he was very tired of this.
No, but the offer was right in the beginning. Moses didn't allow that. Come see a beautiful Zohar from the book of the Zohar who analyzes the difference between Moses and between Noah and Moses. Go ahead, Michael.
I want to ask a question. When they say not Jacob but Israel, is there any kind of significance between how you call
yes,
the person?
Yes, yes. Jacob and Israel. In Hebrew, Jacob is considered the word Yaakov. Yaakov means the heel of the foot. That's how the name means heel. Because Jacob, when he came out from his mother's womb, he was holding on to the heel of Esau. trying to get out first. Israel is the word li rosh. Rosh means the head. In sar, it means leader. It means to say Israel represents the Jewish people on the better side, higher level. Jacob is when the Jewish people are on like a hill that everybody can step over them. Israel is when they are leaders, when they are leading the Jewish people and the world.
So he wanted here to emphasize that.
Exactly. Good that you thought about it. Also, when I was reading it now, I paid attention to it. Yeah, and in general, it's written in Hasidus that the Jewish people on Shabbat, they are considered Israel. Because Shabbat, the Jewish people are, they daven, they sit with family, they are a little elevated, they don't sit on the cell phones the whole day, they are more spiritual. Comes the rest of the week, they are Jacob, they are Yaakov, they're going down, they have to deal with life, they have to deal with everyday challenges. Everyone has his own challenges. Then on Saturday night, there is a song that some community sing, the prayer that said, Al tira avdi Yaakov, do not fear my servant Jacob. Now you were Israel, you were on all Shabbat, you were like a king, you and your wife, a king and a queen sitting by the table and enjoying the Shabbat and on a higher level. And then you with community, with family, and then you go to the regular week and you have to still deal with the same nonsense and garbage that every person has to deal with. Then you feel down. That's why Saturday night people feel a little, Then God gives us strength. He tells us, move on, be strong. Then, yeah, here Moses is pointing out they are Israel, even they worship idols. Don't think they are nothing. They are holy people. They're high level people. They can turn around things.
Doesn't Israel also mean struggle with God?
Yeah, it also means struggle with people and God. Yes, Sarita and Elokim and Anashim. Yes. But it means struggle and won the fight. And you won the fight. That's what it's all about. But Tuchal, it means to say, he struggled with an angel. Jacob struggled with an angel. That's when he got the name Israel. He struggled with the angel, and he won the fight over the angel. It means you can do it. You are stronger than the angels.
Comparing the response of Noah and Moses, let us examine the difference between Moses and the rest of the world. When God told Moses, now leave me alone, I'll make you into a great nation, Moses immediately responded, shall I leave the Jews to their faith for my own sake? The Jews will say, I abandoned them like Noah.
The Jews said, I will live for, throw the Jews under the bus for myself? I'll be like Noah? No. See, Noah had nobody to learn from. You know, it's a chochem to be, when you have so many experiences, and you say, oh, I know what to do to God. I will never do the same thing. You tell yourself.
I think it started the whole progression. This matter started when Abraham was trying to get people out of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, you're right. The Medrash brings also the example from Abraham. He also, in the end of the day, didn't save the people of Sodom. He tried.
He asked,
but he didn't. Moses did it. That's a different. You're right. You see, it's like... People say always, when you see other people behave, they say, I will never do the same thing again. Everybody says, I will not be like my mother, and I'll be like my father. Right? And then they do exactly what the mother and father do. What is a small? I mean, Miriam is dealing with many young families, and they fight. And then when Miriam tells them, he's trying to help you, not to hurt you. Then they start to cry, say, oh, I'm just behaving just like my mother. Yeah. Then, but men do have the same problem, and so on. Here, Moses was able to see what Noah did, what Abraham did, and said, I'm not going to do this. Because... Michael,
because
you want to
go
It's okay. Because God told Noah that he would rescue him in the ark along with his family. Noah did not ask God to have mercy and spare the world from being destroyed. This is why it's known as the Noah's flood. Moses said the people...
Noah's flood. The flood is called by the prophet May Noah. It's named after Noah. Why, so to speak, we blame him? It's Noah's flood. If he would be a little bit more persistent, maybe it wouldn't be a flood. If he would stand up to God, that's what the Zohar is saying. Continue.
Moses said, The people of the world will say that I killed them because God promised he would make me into a great nation. I would rather die than the Jews will be annihilated. Moses beseeched God for the mercy for them and for the world. He did not give up until he offered his own life, and then God forgave them. Noah did not do so. He was content with personally being saved, and he abandoned the world. Moses risked his life for the Jewish people.
That's the bottom line. Noah did not, he was saying, I'm saved. Fine, good. The famous Hasidic example is a tzaddik in pelts. You know, when you're in the winter, you can wear a big pelts and like warms you up. One day it's cold in the house. There's two options. There's to wear, put on a big coat or going under the blanket, or to turn and eat. You know what the difference is? If you get under the blanket, only you are warm. If you turn and eat, everybody is warm. Noah got under the blanket. Moses turned and eat.
Didn't, because it took him 120 years during that time, wasn't he sort of warning the people? Or
Yeah. But can you imagine?
Give him a little credit for that.
Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine Chabad Rabbi is trying 120 years to get a minion and he cannot get a minion? Something is wrong, you understand?
You have to move the time.
This alone is the proof that something was wrong in the message. It means to say, people, the Rashi says, Ma'amin ve'ino ma'amin. Noah was like this. People ask him, no, are you sure it's going to be a flood? He said, I think so. And say, he was like, yes and no. That's the way it's written. He did not have this conviction that it takes to bring people around.
But yeah, God, because the last line.
We love him. Noah was a good boy. Yeah, Noah was a good boy. A good boy.
But
yeah,
now he's, you know, we're not making him out to be such a great guy. I'll
tell you, that's where we're going. Don't feel so bad for Noah. Don't worry. We'll work this out. Okay, continue, Danny.
He did not give up until the earth. He afforded his own life, and God...
No, we already said it. Rabbi Yehuda said...
Rabbi Yehuda says, although Noah was perfectly righteous, he wasn't worthy for God to spare the entire world on his account.
Rabbi Yehuda says, it wasn't such a righteous man that the world to save the whole world. You understand? Even if he would try, it wouldn't happen. Moses, here is what the reason why Moses was successful. Go ahead.
Come and see. Moses didn't ask in his own merit, but in the merit of the patriarch. But Noah and had nobody whose merit he could account, and like Moses had.
Says, what do you want from Noah? Moses was after Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It goes to God and says, do it for Abraham, Isaac, for the fathers of the Jewish people. Well, Noah had a few schleppers. There was no great people beside Adam and Eve.
He's already gone by then, right?
No, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were gone too.
No. Adam and Eve already by then.
Sure, absolutely. But I mean to say, is taking their merits, like just like Moses said, do it for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Israel, the same thing Noah should say, do it for the tzaddikim before me. Noah did not have anybody to rely on, to collect their credit, their collateral, and to say to God, do it for their sake. There was no righteous people who can defend the world, so to speak.
Who would Noah have referred to?
That's what Rabbi Yehuda says, exactly this.
But there's no one there.
That's the problem. That's why Rabbi Yehuda says, we cannot blame Noah, he had nobody there. Exactly, that's the point. Yes, thank you. Nevertheless, says Rabbi Yitzchok.
Nevertheless, because Hashem made a covenant with Noah, he should have asked for mercy. He should have brought the offering that he sacrificed after the flood, before the flood, perhaps that would have placated Hashem. Rabbi Yehuda said, what was Noah to do? The evil was...
One second, the Rabbi Yitzchok says, nevertheless, he had to pray for them. That's not this calculation that he didn't have anybody to rely on and he couldn't bring, he didn't have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's all nice and fine. The bottom line is somebody comes and tells you, we're going to destroy the world. You say, what? What's going on here? Absolutely not. Beg them. Even if you feel they deserve it, no matter what, the reaction is to be, we're going to fight for it. It should never happen. And then when he came out from the ark, it's written that Noah offered a sacrifice to, so to speak, to pray to God, to an offering, to please God. If he would offer the sacrifice before the flood, maybe it wouldn't be a flood. Now you're coming with your sacrifice, the Shekoyach.
Rabbi Yehuda said, what was Noah to do? The evil people of the world incited Hashem, and he would bring sacrifice. Noah was afraid for himself. He did not want to meet the fate of his fellow brothers, whose deeds were that he saw constantly
enraged. He says Rabbi Yehuda is trying to defend them. He says, you know, they were all evil, they were all bad, they couldn't help it. Okay. Go ahead, please.
A higher power comes and asks or tells you to do something. It seems like that would be a good, you'd be on the right side of things to follow instructions.
If this will hurt other people, the answer is no. Especially the Jewish people, no. You should tell God, God, if you need somebody to hurt Mr. Z or Mr. A or Mr. B, find another messenger. I don't want to be a part of it. Exactly this, we pray for God. We should be messengers of good things, of good tidings. Sometimes you have no choice, but you're better off giving this mitzvah to somebody else. Even because when you see something is wrong happening, you not say, but they was asked, I followed orders. You know who gave this excuse? The Germans, the Nazis. Said, we all follow orders. Oh, don't they follow orders? Sure. Even when you follow orders, if it's for something evil, you're not allowed to do it. Even when God himself tells you that, God actually is expecting, God expected for Moses to fight for the Jewish people. You know, it's in the line, God says, now let me and I will destroy him. What means let me? Can Moses not allow him? God wanted him, by the say let me, God wanted to that you can, he can stop it. God wants to hear from human beings that they are caring for each other. When they don't, he's very disappointed. He says, you didn't care. I said, I'm going to kill the world, and you said nothing. I'm going to kill the Jewish people. And you said, I don't care. I have my lunch. Good. That's a problem. It's a huge disappointment when you see somebody that you love very much, and you tell him, I'm going to kill this person, and he says, no. He said, where were you? It's like a test almost. It's a test. God is testing the world. How much they will stand up for each other. That's what God is testing.
Rebbe, my father explained, Rabbi Yehuda interprets Noah in a positive light, and Rabbi Yitzchak interprets him in a negative light, because each of them is expressing the perspective of their spiritual level.
He says something very interesting. Every person is born a certain way, right? Some people are more positive, more find good in every person. They see good in every person. Some people see... They call it the truth. Other people say that they call it the negative. Every person is like this. Rabbi Yehuda was coming what he was more a kind person that he looked for how to find a good to defend Noah. Rabbi Yitzchok was more strict in person, his personality, his gvura, than he was looking to say that Noah did the wrong thing.
But it's a projection. It's who they are.
You're right. That's what exactly what he says. Continue.
Even in the case of the laws governing things prohibited and permitted, which have been revealed to us and to our children, we find differences of opinion.
No. You were in the middle of the first paragraph. Rabbi Yehuda personifies
the attribute of kindness and therefore interprets Noah in a positive light, while Rabbi Yitzchak personifies the attribute of severity and interprets Noah in a negative way.
Yeah, you're right. It shows them, it says what he is. You know, when you see somebody bought a very expensive car, you say he bought a car to show off. How you know that he bought it? You interview them. You ask them. You know it because you're saying that if I would buy it, I would do it to show off. Obviously, he's doing it to show off. You understand? Then you're taking your personality and you put it in this person. That's absolutely true. Then that's what... The commentary from the Rebbe's father was a Kabbalist and the story in the Zohar. Okay. Now, there is two opinions. Was Noah did the right thing or did the wrong thing? Source number 4. Daniel, please.
Even in the case of the laws governing things prohibited and permitted, which have been revealed to us and to our children, we find differences of opinion among Mishnaic and Talmudic sages from one extreme to the other. Yet, all are the words of the living God. The plural is used as a reference to the source of life for the souls of Israel, which are generally divided into three categories: right, left, and center, namely kindness, chesed, severity, gevura, and so on. The souls whose root originates in the category of kindness are likewise inclined towards kindness and the leniency of their decisions, and so forth, as is known.
Yeah, and then in the Torah could be opinions this way, opinions this way, and there is space for both of them. To learn a lesson, you can go both directions.
Rabbi, isn't it like this issue of Rabbi Yehud and Rabbi Yitzhak? This is, you can be applied also just a decision you make in life or direction you take, and you know, if you are trying to deal with something directly, like forcefully, or you just trying to be kind and to see if everything will by itself will be
working out,
especially in context of what's happening right now. I think this is kind of just some people saying, hey, let's appease, let's just deal with this, and someone saying, hey, this is, let's just uproot these things and everything. And even in our own life, we also kind of just, hey, which way are we going? Are we taking a step to this direction or this direction? I think it applies more even your thinking, how you approach to...
You're right. That's why we get married, and one is kindness, the other one is gevura. Then you have, sometimes you go this direction, sometimes you go this direction. You cannot be only kindness, only gevura, only chesed. You cannot be only one way. You have to, it's a combination, because the right way is tiferet. Tiferet is a combination of gevura and chesed. It's called rachamim. I'm not going to the whole thing, but the idea is you have to combine it. You cannot go just in one direction. Go, this is the law, and if you don't do the law, you're dead. It doesn't work like this. On the other end, you cannot be so weak that everybody walks all over you. And it has to be somewhere in between. That's why we need to have two, that's why we cannot make decisions on our own. We need to have other opinions, and to, sometimes you have to be kind, some situations you have to be stricter, yes. Don't open the door. Yeah, my friend. Yeah, I know where you're going with that. I'll tell you, in Israel...
Behind both of those decisions, you can find base. Hey,
you, yes,
right.
Yes.
You see, it's just, I think it's not sometimes you're doing this, sometimes it's up to you, kind of like...
No. I mean to say, because there is some... That's why it says, we say both of them are the words of the living God. It means to say there is a place for this way and there is a place for this way. And depends on the
one
situation.
One rabbi can say, hey, that's better this
yes.
way. And one rabbi
yes.
can totally say, hey, that's what it
yes.
says in Torah.
Yes.
Or that's,
yes, exactly. And that's why some people go to rabbis who are like this and some people go to rabbis like this. Yes. Usually, when American asks me a question, I ask them, you want to hear the truth or you want to find the most lenient way around it? they usually want the most lenient way around it. I speak to a Russian guy, does he tell you the truth? I'm telling you. I see it every day.
But strict is not negative necessarily.
You're right, but yeah. still strict is more painful. That's
strict
the bottom
more.
Line. That's the bottom line. Strict is more painful.
People don't like it.
Oh, people don't
but
like it.
Doesn't mean that it
yeah,
shouldn't be.
Yeah, that's when I speak in public and I talk to all the community together, I have to take the most lenient approach because everybody is there. I cannot turn off Jews from Judaism. But then somebody asked me personally, asked him, tell me, where are you standing in this business? How much are you ready to be committed to this issue? I'm not telling him something he's not ready to deal with. Then that's the difference between Russians and Americans. I made my own experience. You don't need experiment. You know, people pay for studies millions of dollars. I can do it for much cheaper. Okay. Go ahead.
The Rebbe judging favorably.
Yes.
The matter is still difficult. The Torah's instructions judge every person favorably is, of course, directed to every Jew, including those who represent the attribute of severity. How then could Rebbe Yitzchak interpret Noah in a negative light and not judge him favorably as the Mishnah instructs?
The question is, there is a Jewish, in Judaism, the Mishnah says you should always judge people favorably. It's not about, you don't have to take him to court, or you don't have to, you're not the judge, really. You're seeing a person's behavior. You can say, what an idiot, or you can say, you know, he's going through a very hard time. Now, I have many stories of Just the other day, somebody told me that his son, when he was going through a divorce, his son was practicing in a sport, and he had problems. He told the coach, he came to the coach and told him, "No, this my boy is going through a hard time now." And he told him, I felt something like this, and therefore I dealt with him much more lenient. I was much more easier with him, because he was. The point is, when you see a person is behaving in a way that it's not normal for him, or it's not, instead of saying, "Where did this book grow up? Where is he coming?" Say, "No, he's probably going through a hard time. He lost his job. He's getting divorced. He had a terrible day. He's coming." Give him the benefit of the doubt. Exactly. That's the Mishnah said, not I said. That the question is, how can Rabbi Yitzchok judge Noah? Judge him, and not favorably, when the Mishnah says you have to judge every person favorably.
But then, also, I'm sorry, doesn't it also say, I don't know where it says, but if you're going to be kind to the cruel, you'll be cruel to the kind.
You're right. Close the window, it's too cold.
You need a remote control.
I feel bad.
There's a seat right over there.
No, he gets a special fee for this. I'll tell you, yeah. If you are merciful to the cruel, to the Hamas people, you are cruel to the merciful. You understand? If I save a terrorist, the person who organized this whole event was one of the 1,000 people who were released in the exchange with the
Foreign
Police. With what is his name? Gilad Shalit.
Gilad Shalit, yeah.
Many, many of them, the biggest terrorists are the one who was released. Then what is happening? We were merciful for one, then became cruel for thousands. You understand what is happening here? This is true. But now we're talking about Noah, who lived 4,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago.
Yeah, they did.
It's not about something that it's in your control. You're seeing something behaving the wrong way. That's what the difference is.
What about people who their norm is behaving the wrong way?
Then again, if you can control the situation and you can make them better, you have an obligation to tell them that. But if it's something you cannot change it, it's not in your control. You can judge them favorably or judge them not favorably. Then you get nothing from judging them not favorably, just getting angry, and you're creating a bad environment. And it's more than that. When you speak about a person bad, you bring out the bad in them. There is a Jewish belief that when I speak about Mr. A, that he's such a terrible guy, this, I accomplish in the world that his bad side comes. Because I speak about it, the more I speak about it, the more the bad side of him comes out.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's how we will learn about that probably next week. Yeah, it's in the making. Yeah, but this is our world about the third person. It's written when you speak Lashon Hara, it's affecting three people. The person, the speaker, the listener, and the person you speak about. The person who speaks, you know, he speaks Lashon Hara, evil, he speaks gossip, he's doing a sin. The person who listens, it affects him too, because he listens. If he wouldn't listen, I wouldn't talk. I cannot talk to the wolves. Then he's a part in the crime. But why should the person that you speak about should it be affected? Kabbalah tells us, Chassidus speaks about it, the Rebbe said it many times. By the time, because I speak about the third person bad, I affect them. And if I speak about them good, I affect them too. I bring out the best of them. That's why the Rebbe was so busy speaking good about people. Nothing negative came out from his mouth.
Is
what?
A direct effect or some...
No, I mean... A direct effect. You means you bring out... You know, the difference between Freud and what was the name of the other guy?
Freud and who?
No.
Jung?
Yeah, he would.
No.
Carl Jung?
No, Carl Jung.
Alfred Adler?
No, the guy who wrote...
Rogers?
No. The guy who wrote the book...
Dr. Spock.
Viktor Frankl.
Viktor Frankl, finally.
It took a while.
You were giving so much...
Freud said how bad people are. They became bad. Frankl said every person has a soul. What's the name of his book he wrote about?
Man's
Search for Meaning.
Man's Search for Meaning.
An unbelievable book. When a person reads it, he finds his meaning. You bring him up. You elevate him. You bring the best out of him. And what we say has an effect on the world.
That's a lot of pressure, Rabbi.
You bet. I have the same problem, but now I'm preaching. I'm preaching to you guys, not to myself.
I'm talking experience.
Moreover, you want to read the next one? Don't speak
derogatively. Moreover, the Torah doesn't even speak negatively about non-kosher animals.
Non-kosher animals, you don't. In this parsha, in Parshat Noah, there's a very interesting thing. Go ahead, continue. Rabbi Yudas ben Levi said.
Rabbi Yudas ben Levi said, never let a derogatory word come out of your mouth, because the verse used 8 extra letters to avoid saying something unclean. As it says, from the pure animals and from the animals that are not pure.
See, when God told Noah to bring in the animals into the ark, he told them to bring the pure animals. That pure animals means the kosher animals. And bring the unpure animals. Usually in the Torah, ta'or means pure. And unpure, there is a word for it, tameh, a negative word. Not impure. There is not even a word in English for it. If you want the good animals and the bad animals. The Torah didn't use the word the bad animals. The Torah used the word the animals who are not good. You understand?
How did Noah know?
God told them. Talking about what God told Noah. Or how he knew which animals are not pure. Yeah. Obviously, he knew about it. God told them. Yes, he was a prophet.
There's no kosher laws.
The kosher and non-kosher. We don't say the treif. You understand the difference in the word treif or non-kosher? Non-kosher is not good. We don't say bad. In the Rebbe's world, there was nobody was sick. It was not healthy. Nobody was dead. It's not alive. Nobody was evil. It's not good. You understand? It's how you speak. And this is written in the Torah. Then the Rebbe is asking, if there is a Torah, the Mishnah says, don't judge every person favorably. The Torah itself taught us, then when you don't have to, you go to great length not to use a negative word. Then why Rabbi Yitzchok is speaking like this? He's judging negatively. Go ahead.
The Rebbe, if the Torah is careful not to write a negative word about an animal, how much more so should this apply to Noah, who was a righteous man? How then can it be that Rabbi Yitzchok interprets him in a negative light?
Yes. If you don't think bad about an animal, Noah. It's much better. It much deserves some more than that. Go ahead.
Noah was a righteous man, perfect in his generations. We also need to understand Rashi's commentary on the words perfect in his generations. Rashi comments, some of our sages interpret the specification in his generations positively, arguing that had Noah lived in a righteous era, he would have been even more righteous. Other sages interpret this specification negatively, arguing that Noah was only righteous relative to his generation, but he had iced in his generation of ape, lived.
Must be lived.
I never saw such a word.
Had he lived.
You ever heard such a word?
Well, yeah, I mean.
The word iced. Yeah. Not
in this context, yeah.
What, ice in the freezer? What ice?
I had to read it twice over. I'm like, what?
The road's iced up. It was cold in the winter. The roads got iced up.
But had he lived.
Okay.
But had he lived. Yeah.
What's the translation say?
Go ahead.
But had he lived in the generation of Abraham, he wouldn't have been considered great at all.
Go ahead.
Considering that it is possible to interpret Noah in a positive light, how can it be that some great sages chose to interpret him specifically in a negative light? We also need to understand the practical lesson we can derive from this for our personal development.
Then Rashi, not only the Zohar, Rashi brings also two opinions. Some say, it's written in the Torah, Noah was the righteous man in his generation. Some people say, even in such a bad generation, he was a righteous man. Everybody was evil. To be a righteous man in a normal generation is not so hard. But to live in the Soviet Union in the 50s, in the 60s, and not being an atheist, that's an achievement. Then the other rabbi said, in his generation, you are compared to all the gangsters, he was a righteous man. Put him in a generation of Abraham, he said, no, he's a regular guy. Then the same question, if you can give him, that the Torah says he was a righteous man. Why you have to turn this upside down? Only in his generation is righteous. Put him in a normal generation, is not righteous. Why to take it this direction, if you can take it the right direction?
Because that person is negative.
The question is, if the Torah and the Mishnah says we have to judge everybody favorably, how did the rabbis say the same thing?
I never heard that perfect in his generation. It was always righteous man for his generation.
No. Ish tzadik tomim maya. Tamim means perfect.
But if he didn't live in a perfect generation of generation. Righteous men, you can't go backwards and say if.
You he could.
Didn't. I mean, he didn't live in a generation.
No, the problem is like this. It's written he was the righteous man in his generation. Usually the Torah writes, this is the righteous man. What means this is the righteous man in his generation? A righteous man. When the Torah writes a righteous man in his generation, the Torah wants to say something. The question what the Torah wants to say, something good or something bad?
Or you want to compare him to someone?
Oh, in a different generation. Yeah. That's why the rabbis are coming. They're not just looking for reasons to say something.
Actually, God saved Noah from being
lost. Someone that Rabbi's question is like, okay, the only thing that he could say is he listened to word, Hashem's word, followed his request.
No.
Build the ark.
Look. The other rabbi says. In a generation that everybody were killed each other, they were cannibals, they were horrible. And Noah was a righteous man, God spoke to him. That's a huge achievement. It's a different if you're in a place, you live in a place like this, you're in a place of gangsters. And everybody's a gangster and you're the only one who are a good person. The influence of evil is so strong that you're standing holding on. The Talmud actually, that's two rabbis, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shlokish. Rabbi Yochanan was a righteous man from birth. Rish Lakish was a gladiator. Then he came back to Judaism. That Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, in his generation he was a righteous man. He being a normal Jew, he was a nothing. Rish Lakish told him, you don't understand the influence, the strength, how hard is it to be righteous in a generation, in a place of gladiators, of a place of bad people. I know what it is, and I'm telling you, it takes a lot of strength. And that's why he judged them favorably. It's a whole lot of stuff. In any case, what you learn, the question is, what do you learn from speaking negative about person? What are we accomplishing here? Okay, go ahead. Very good.
In matters of law, clarity is paramount. There is a well-known question asked regarding the rule that the Torah adds unneeded words in order to avoid stating something derogatory. Despite this rule, we find that the Torah uses the word impure many times, and not just terms such as the animal that is impure.
The Torah is using the word treif, tameh, many places. Then why some places the Torah is going in great length to not to use the word, the negative word, and in other places the Torah is actually using it? That's the question.
The answer is that when discussing practical law, it is imperative to use clear and precise language to avoid any possibility for misunderstanding. Therefore, in legal context, the Torah states clearly that certain things are impure, forbidden, etc. However, when the context is a story that doesn't have practical ramifications, the Torah uses clean language and avoids stating anything derogatory.
Okay, then, you see the difference? If you see somebody behaving in a bad way, and you will start to say, oh, we don't understand, we feel bad for him, then your child listens and he thinks that this is the right behavior. Then you have to say this is wrong. But if you're talking about a story from 100 years ago, then you can say, no, we don't know what the situation was. It doesn't mean we have to do it, but we don't know what the person, why he did it. Then whenever the Torah is talking about what needs to be done, this is treif. This is not pure. We have to say it as it is. When the Torah is telling a story about Noah's Ark, how God, he told them which animals to take, which name. They don't use the negative word. They use round and about words to tell you what it means. Because in general, a person has to try to use as his language has to be as clean as possible. And I say again, I learned he never used a negative word. He turned around verses from the Bible, twist them around, not to use a negative word. Talmudic statement, it was like an old art, how you can say the same thing, and turn the whole thing around upside down and finding good in the negative statement itself. We're not going, it's a whole other lecture in its own. Go ahead.
The ramifications of Noah. This principle can explain our case. When there is something negative about Noah's conduct, this can be covered up in order to focus solely on the positive. This has practical importance in order to caution us not to take an example from this conduct. There is no choice but to point out the negative aspect in order to teach us not to emulate.
He says the reason why Rabbi Yitzchok, the rabbis are saying that what Noah was wrong, is not just to curse him out, to embarrass him, to say bad things about him. It's for us to learn how to be. You have two options. You can be, you can learn from Moses, you can learn from Noah. I say, well, I will say, you say, but there is Moses, there is Noah. Who says I have to be like Moses? I'll be like Noah. Noah is not a good Jew. God says he's not a good person. God said he was a perfect man in his generation. Right? Perfect, righteously in his generation. Who says I have to be like Moses? I'll be like Noah. Then this rabbi is coming and saying, no, he cannot be like Noah. That's why they said. Want to continue?
What was the negative aspect about Noah's conduct? The Zohar notes the difference between Noah and Moses. Moses prayed to God for mercy for sinners, and they were saved. Noah, by contrast, did not pray for the sinners of his generation. And this is why the flood is known by his name, Noah's Flood. The Zohar does explain that Moses beseeched God not in his own merit, but in the merit of the patriarchs. Noah didn't have the patriarchs to invoke, so what could he have done? But nevertheless, he should have tried asking for mercy in his own merit.
Right? Noah was, in the, even if he didn't have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it's not an excuse, but here comes the punchline. Michael. You want to continue?
Noah wants to be interpreted negatively.
Noah wants to be interpreted negative. You understand? It's a tikkun for Noah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Noah wants rectification for his failure to pray on behalf of the world. Rectification is achieved through the Torah relating this and emphasizing that this conduct was incorrect and cautioning us not to emulate it.
Okay, here it is. Noah did wrong. How can Noah atone for his sin, for not praying for his generation? By us learning not to do like him, we're doing him a favor. Then his wrongdoing wasn't a waste. It's being used as a lesson for history, not to be like him. Noah, so to speak, is ready, is sacrificed. That's his tikkun, that is correction, that is his atonement. When he goes around and says, don't be like me. Then the whole world learns from Noah not to be like him. Then it's good that such a story happened. Why God allowed it to happen? You see, we see Noah, we see Moses say, don't be like this. If it wouldn't be a Noah, he would know what not to be. Mm-hmm. And I need both of them. You know, it's like, you see this guy in school, if you don't learn, you look like him. Then you need the negative example to learn how to be. Then we're doing Noah a favor when we talk about them that don't be like them. Continue.
This is somewhat similar to the repentance process for a person who sinned and also caused the public to sin. Personal repentance can only rectify his personal sin, but not for causing others to sin. Rectification for causing others to sin is achieved by publicizing that so-and-so led the public astray. By warning others not to follow his example, his sin is rectified.
You see, somebody who made a public sin, he misled many people and they did something bad. Now he's doing tshuva. He can repent, yeah. But you made another 10, 20, 50 people do the wrong thing. How are you going to fix it? Then by you saying, by the person publicizing his sin and saying, don't learn from me, to the public, that again he's doing something to the public, a good service to the public. He wills the public of this behavior and says, don't learn from me, don't do it. That's how he's atoning for his public sin. Because he affected the public in a negative way, now he has to affect the public in a positive way. And the same thing, that's what is happening with Noah. We're doing Noah, the Torah is doing Noah a favor by pointing out not to learn from him. Ultimately,
but the Torah is doing that.
With the Torah, Rabbi Yitzchok. And Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan.
But it doesn't always do that because we're on our own to do it today. We have to do that ourselves. Yes. If we did something wrong,
you go around and tell your children, "Don't be such idiots like I was." You do it the right way.
Well, but you lead by example, not by words.
This is true. And that's so why. But you, there are certain things. Let's say you were a bad example before. Now you're a good example, but you can tell your children, I had to make the mistake, and then I realized what that I'm doing, I've came to the right way. You don't have to go make the mistake. You can go
the
right
way. Do as I say, not as I do.
No. I know this line. Yeah, this is, we believe very much in example. It's all about example. Right. Judaism believes only in example. But this is a part of the example, to tell them that you were a bad example.
Isn't implicit in all this this belief that people can change, people can learn? That includes anybody and everybody.
If Absolutely. They want to, right.
If they want to, yeah, I see.
No.
That's Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda.
This is wishful thinking.
Well, that's where
well,
the
can just mean
right.
implies you have an ability to do it. Doesn't mean you're going
no,
to.
No, then the answer is like this. When you need to defend people, you cannot say, oh, he might be a good person. We have to eradicate them from the face of the earth. But when it's not evident, I cannot affect it and I cannot help it. And it doesn't affect another person. Then we can believe in it and help people. It's not a contradiction. Somebody's in jail because they have to be in jail because they have to protect them from society. Does mean that you don't have to go to jail and to try to make him into a good person because you believe in every person. It's not a contradiction. These two things. We don't give up on the human being. God keeps him alive. We have to try the best. Does mean we have to open up and we take him out of jail and let him hurt society. You understand? But in jail is not the reason just to keep him in jail. We have to try to make him a better person. We have to believe in him. We have to tell him that we believe in him. We have to tell him that he has the power to do it.
Something is wrong. You don't give up on thinking that it's a good person. But if it's...
As long as he doesn't deserve that and he's alive, we have to try to turn him around. Doesn't mean we have to let society suffer from him, but we have to try to turn him around.
But that's not what really happens in the jails anymore.
That's a problem. That's a problem. But really, it should be. It should happen. Sure. There is jails that happens. There is chaplains and things. And some people can turn around. More than we think. But you're right. It could be much more. I mean, and it could be. I know that in Israel, some years, I remember years ago, they made special programs for people to return. And Chabad is having programs in jails, and the jail authorities cooperate with them, and they bring them, they take them out, and they make them into good people.
Yeah, you don't see that on the. Yeah, there's plenty of people.
Yeah. You just don't read about that. But you read the bad news.
Shalom still go around or not?
He's still not. But he went a few years. He went in the summer. He went to visit Jewish prisoners in different jails in Texas and in Florida. It's all about helping them to come around.
There's a recidivism program right here in Cleveland that's doing really well.
Yeah, I mean, there is many programs. Yeah, go ahead. Therefore, a piece there. Okay, well, who's supposed to read? Go ahead.
Ultimately, no one to interpret him negatively and state that he did not act properly with regard to failing to pray on behalf of his fellow people because this rectified his error.
Yeah, he wants people to say, I did a stupid thing and I want you not to do it. You should learn from me not to do it. Look what happened to me. Go ahead.
Moses wants to be like Aaron. This is similar to what we once explained about the different form of love for their fellow Jews that Moses and Aaron expressed. When Moses died, the Torah tells us that the men carried and mourned his death, but when Aaron died, the women mourned as well. This was because Aaron excelled in a restoring peace and harmony between married couples.
Okay, there is something very interesting. When Aaron died, it's written that the whole house of Israel was mourning him for 30 days. The whole house of Israel means, house of Israel, whenever it's written house of Israel, means the women too. Because their home is the woman. Children of Israel, it means the men. House of Israel means the woman, because who makes from the apartment a house? The woman. She makes it into a home. Then by Aaron, it's written the whole nation mourned, men, women, everybody. By Moses, it's written, then the children of Israel, not even all, it's not written the word all children of Israel. The word all is not written, and only the children of Israel. Some of the men mourned Moses, not all of them. Aaron died before Moses. When Aaron died, the whole nation of Israel, men, women, children, everybody mourned them. When Moses died, it wasn't the same. Then the Torah writes, when it's written about Moses' death, we just read it last week on Sunday, this past Sunday. A week from today, last Sunday. We read about Moses' death. And Rashi says, by Moses' death, only the children of Israel, different than Aaron, by Aaron, everybody mourned. What is this? When you write about Moses' death, you're insulting him by writing the death by Aaron, more people mourned? It makes sense to write it by Aaron. You know, I pointed out, you know, by Aaron, everybody died, not like everybody mourned, not like by Moses. But are you writing about Moses' death? And God says that Moses was the servant of God, a man of God. All the best compliments about God, about Moses, you're writing in a note. You know, I have something to tell you. By Aaron, more people mourned. This is not nice. You go to a funeral of somebody who says, you know, by his wife, there were more people there. That is to say it. What is this? Then why the Torah here by Moses' death writes that Aaron had more people? Go ahead. Hey, you're supposed to read. Go ahead. Danny, you're supposed to read, right? Go ahead.
The son of Israel mourned Moses when passing in the plains of Moab for 30 days, and then they concluded a day of mourning for Moses. The whole congregation saw that Aaron had passed, and the entire house of Israel wept for Aaron for 30 days.
The entire house, the word entire, they should also point out. The entire house of Israel mourned for 30 days. Rashi explains, go ahead.
The sons of Israel mourned Moses. This means the men alone. But regarding Aaron, due to his pursuit of peace and efforts to restore harmony between couples, the verse says that the house of Israel mourned him, meaning first mourned him.
Then Rashi points out why people loved Aaron more than Moses. The big Moses, right? That is, we all remember, we all learn everything from him. By the people, Aaron was loved more. Aaron was a nice guy. He was going around to people. He said, hi, how are you? You need help in your marriage. He was a marriage counselor. He saw a couple in a fight. He used to make peace. He saw friends are in a fight. He used to ask people, you need help. Maybe I should teach you something. He was going around the whole day and helping people. Aaron was the boss. Aaron, and Moses was the leader. He couldn't be nice to every...
The social worker was
have more gavura.
Yeah, Aaron was the social worker. Yeah. And Moses couldn't be the social worker. He had to be the leader. Yeah. You have to sometimes put his your foot down.
Isn't it because somehow I assume maybe because Moses had the highest level of, you know, our admiration for us. In order for Aaron to be almost as equal, we have to bring that thing. He has more of the people's love than, you know.
The point is, yeah, it's all of this is true. The point is, he has to be, Moses was, the bottom line, Moses couldn't be the nicest guy in town. That's the bottom line. Then why we pointed out in Moses' death, it's not nice. Go ahead, continue.
The Rebbe, this matter is stated and emphasized in the Torah portion that discusses Moses' greatness, because Moses himself desires that the Torah should emphasize this so that all Jews should know that love for their fellow Jews should be expressed like the way that Aaron did it.
You see, Moses wanted to tell you, don't learn from me. I was a leader, I had no choice. Learn from Aaron. A person say, well, I'd be like Moses. Why not? Moses put his foot down. Moses prayed to God. The whole Korach and his family should swallow up in the earth. This guy in Shul, I'll pray to God. The earth should open. He should swallow up. He should be dead. I do like Moses. Why not? Don't be Moses. Moses tells you, don't be like me. Be like Aaron. I had no choice. I was the leader. You're not the leader. You'll be nice like Aaron to everybody. That Moses won. That's why it's written by Moses' death. Moses won. We should learn from him to be like Aaron. In other words,
if we only praise Noah, we leave a shortcoming of his in place. But when we also highlight something undesirable about his conduct, with the intention of cautioning against it, we rectify it, thereby transforming Noah to be fully meritorious and praiseworthy.
Exactly. But if he would say just Noah was a good guy, people say, oh, I'm like Noah. Many times people tell me, I'm a good person. I didn't kill anybody. It's not enough to be a good person. You didn't kill anyone. Not doing bad is not enough. You know, in the world, for not doing bad, you better be not born. Anybody who is not born is not doing bad. You're born to do good. I didn't do anything bad. I never did anything wrong. Ask every American. He thinks he's the most righteous man on earth. But no, at least like no. We'll skip the page. We'll go to page 15. Go ahead.
The Rebbe, the lesson. There is a lesson we can all learn from the Zohar in regards to our divine service. We must know that regardless of how advanced our divine service is, we can never be satisfied with our current state. We must constantly strive for more, knowing that our current state is derogatory relative to the higher level that stands beyond. Awareness of this derogation will inspire us to overcome it and reach the higher level. But if we think only of the praiseworthiness of our current level, we will get stuck on it, a level that is derogatory relative to the level beyond it.
Everybody pays himself on his shoulder. I need so much. That if you always compliment yourself, you never go further. Therefore, the Torah teaches us, even Moses, he wasn't perfect. You better be better. Oh, I'm the best guy in town. How dare you say this? Me? How many times people tell me, Rabbi, I did all the right things with my kids. I don't know what happened. My kids did all the right things. And I listen and say, you did all the right things. Sure, only the right things. You never did anything wrong. I also think I did all the right things. Ask my wife, I'll tell her I did all the right things. But she thinks I did all the wrong things. Then a person, that's what he says. What's the lesson? Criticize yourself. Just like Rabbi Yitzchok criticized Noah. Criticize yourself. Noah wanted to be criticized because this makes him better. Somebody wants to be a good player, a good athlete, a good everything. He doesn't really, oh, you did so well. He wants to hear what he did wrong. And out. What is a coach's job? To teach you what you did wrong and you do better, and you do better, and you do better. And when you come to the coach, you don't come to hear compliments. Oh, you were yesterday. Amazing. You come
Isn't
to
it. How it is today, though?
That's a problem. That's why we are so bad. You're absolutely right.
Everybody's
compliment. Everybody's awarded. Everybody's perfect. Everybody's 10.
The best.
Everybody's the best. Everybody's the best. Oh, because you don't want to make anybody feel bad.
Yeah.
He knows about this.
When
Go ahead.
When we came here, to America, I started showing my oldest daughter was like about 3 then, and she watched Barney. Dinosaur. And they had this song like perfect, perfect. Everybody's perfect. And I was like, what is this? Like, what are they teaching kids?
Everybody's
was totally
perfect.
Against what, how I was born.
Yeah, in Russia, nobody's perfect. The parents do have one job, to criticize you. A compliment, they'll tell other people about you, but they never tell you a compliment. They don't tell them a compliment. They never enter this mindset right there.
Go ahead. Progressing in Torah study. An example from the field of Torah study. A person has studied a particular topic 100 times or even 101 times, they may believe that they have already achieved perfection in this regard. But such a person is nevertheless told that they need to progress further and elevate themselves to an even higher level.
Well, you finish it.
Inspiring others. The same is true regarding inspiring others. We can't suffice with our personal achievements and need to work to inspire others. And ultimately, the entire world.
The point is, you can never say, I'm satisfied. I saw in life people achieve their dreams. The problem is, they stop dreaming. He's happy. Life is good. Rabbi, I'm good.
Life is over.
You want to do something more about Pesach? No, I'm very comfortable. What I did, my father did, my two, my that's good enough. I'm good. I'm done.
They're done.
I'm good. When it comes to money, they're not good. They want more. When it comes to spirituality, they are good. We have to be good. We have to pursue spirituality as much as we pursue money. Shekoyah, hope for coming. Thank you. God bless.